I'm Carol.
And I'm Susan. Welcome to Kickapoo Nightlife, a news magazine where we'll explore our world after sunset, from the stars and planets above to fireflies, frogs, bats, insects, and birds, and not least, humans too, and how we all benefit from darkness at night. We'll explore the importance of dark nights and dark skies, and how we are all made to live in a world that is dark half of every day.
We'll have news on how you can have effective, efficient, affordable lighting that also helps all the birds, bugs, and critters who, like us, need dark skies for health and well-being.
And we'll be talking with people from around Wisconsin and other places who are working to keep our night skies dark while giving us good lighting to live by, as well as experts in the field of biology, medicine, and astronomy who will help us understand the science of how dark skies are as essential to our world as daylight.
We have a special guest who is joining us in the studio today, Scott Lind, a Wisconsin-licensed professional electrical engineer and master electrician, and our very own president of the Kickapoo Valley Initiative, of which both Susan and me are active members and on the board of directors. We'll have an interesting and informative conversation with Scott later in the program.
Dark skies are worth celebrating and worth keeping. Today's program is sponsored by our neighborhood fireflies, the Lampyridae beetles, lighting up the night for over 100 million years. They are now illuminating our meadows and woodlands with a great example of sustainable, renewable, energy-efficient light. And we don't usually think of them that way. Fireflies don't waste any of their energy on dispersing heat into the atmosphere when they make light. 100% of their effort goes into the light you see. Could humans develop a way to make their light this elegantly efficient? I wonder. Firefly light is made by combining two chemicals in their bodies with oxygen. Even baby fireflies, the glowworm larvae, can make light. Fireflies need darkness to do their work. Light pollution of the dark summer sky prevents them from signaling and mating, so there are fewer and fewer fireflies each year where humans are using outdoor lights, and this is true all over the world. Your local firefly community works hard to regulate the health of the soil in meadows, marshes, and fields where they can live. Support them by using dark sky-friendly lighting and turning off your lights you're not using. Give your children and everyone in the future the opportunity to stand out under the stars on a summer evening surrounded by countless fireflies. Fireflies are flying now. Find a grassy field near you and take a twilight walk with the stars and the fireflies. This year, they came out very early in June, and most of them by now have laid their eggs and died. But there still are a few out there, so even now on a twilight evening, go on out and see if you can see a few.
The phenology report for July. Keep an eye out for young skunks. Mothers are caring for their 4 to 5 kits and teaching them to hunt. Beware. A skunk can spray at only 1 month of age and can accurately spray a target over 6 feet away. Whitewater lilies are blooming. This beautiful and fragrant plant prefers quiet ponds and lakes, and its plate-sized leaves are great resting places for frogs and insects such as dragonflies. As you walk along the old 131 trail at the KVR, you've likely heard the repetitive call of this small bird. Its call is a distinctive scratchy witchity, witchity, witchity that you'll probably hear coming from the shrubs around a wetland habitat.
What's the name of the bird?
Oh, it is the common yellow throat.
Yeah, very common. Too.
Witchity, witchity, witchity.
That's right.
Black-eyed Susan is easily spotted with its bright yellow flowers waving gently in the breeze. It can reach 2 to 3 feet in height and has a stiff stem and leaves covered in coarse hair. You will see these lovely bright flowers in the fields and open woodland areas from June through October. Listen for young blue jays begging. Chances are good that you have seen blue jays in your own backyard. Watch them closely this month as the parents venture out and about with their young, full-sized young. Watch for muskrat babies, too, as you hike along and near lakes and ponds. A muskrat mama usually has more than one litter of 1 to 10 young kits each summer. These young muskrats can swim at just 10 days old and are on their own after just 1 month. If you're lucky, you might just catch a peek at one swimming about in search of food.
And Carol, on our night walk last Tuesday along Old 131, we saw a young, very young muskrat swimming in the pond. It was really exciting because he's definitely very, very small and all by himself out there swimming across the pond. So,
oh, timely.
Yeah, yeah, we saw a baby. So today we have a listener question from Don, who lives in Viroqua. Susan and Carol, I was listening to the Viroqua City Council meeting on June 10th, and I heard Scott Lynn's presentation on smart outdoor lighting. He mentioned high-pressure sodium lights. Could you elaborate as to why this common form of lighting might be a problem? Well, Don, that's an interesting question, and you're in luck because our interview with Scott is coming up shortly in this program, and he'll be able to address your question directly, so stay tuned. You are listening to WDRT 91.9, Viroqua, Wisconsin.
Susan, I bet many of our listeners are not aware that bird migration occurs all year long. An interesting fact is also that the majority of bird migration occurs at night. According to the Aero Eco Lab, thousands of birds migrated nightly over the Kickapoo Valley throughout the month of June. Of course, peak migratory times are in the mid-spring and mid-fall, with 51% of bird migration occurring over approximately 9 nights, or 10% of the nights in each of those seasons. Light pollution represents a relatively new event on Earth's surface, though. For organisms that have evolved to migrate under the cover of darkness, the effects of light pollution can be deadly. For birds, lights at night can attract, disorient, and at times result in deadly collisions with buildings, communication towers, and other aerial structures. The vast majority, about 80% of birds in North America, migrate at night, making it imperative to limit artificial light pollution for the conservation of migratory birds. It's estimated that as many as 1 billion birds will die each year due to collisions with buildings lighted by artificial lighting. Yet, light attraction isn't just a problem for birds. Mammals, reptiles, amphibians, fish, and invertebrate face some of the same pressures. Turning off lights at night is the obvious solution. However, determining where and when to turn off lights at a large scale is a challenge. It's unrealistic to expect citizens or businesses to go dark for the entirety of spring and fall, though that would be nice. It isn't going to happen. So emphasizing action on the most intense nights of migration will benefit the greatest number of migrating birds. The Aero Eco Lab, a program sponsored by the University of Colorado, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and the University of Massachusetts Amherst, track bird migration and provide comprehensive predictions related to peak nightly migration. It then sends out light alerts to notify areas when a high migration night is expected to occur. Communities then issue alerts to citizens and businesses to turn off their exterior lights. It's a simple and elegant solution. The Kickapoo Valley Dark Sky Initiative is joining with the Aero Ecolab and other supporting entities to initiate the Lights Out Alerts efforts in the Driftless region. I will be reporting about this remarkable effort in our upcoming shows. But in the meantime, turn off outdoor lights when they are not needed. This easy action will save birds, save the climate, and save the money. And Susan, this is an effort that I'm really passionate about and very interested in. And I hope that our listeners are going to pay attention to our upcoming programs about the Aero Ecolab and the Lights Out Alerts, and will take action on their own behalf in the fall when migration begins again.
Yeah, I think it might be a really good way for people to sample having less light at night, having different light at night, because they could do it for the birds and see how it is.
That's a reality test.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, go birds.
Yeah. All right, well, Carol and I are looking forward to welcoming Scott Lind today. We've been looking forward to this for a while. And he's an expert in smart outdoor lighting designed to preserve our dark skies. So welcome, Scott. And you have quite a list of skills and certifications in the electrical lighting world, and I can't even hardly begin to list them all. So I'd like to start by just having you tell people what you do and what you're trained in, so we know kind of the place you're talking from.
Sure. Good morning. I'm so happy to be here with you. I'm a licensed electrical engineer in the state of Wisconsin. I was previously licensed in 14 other states, but I am no longer licensed in those states. But I work for Mead & Hunt in Middleton as a consulting engineer. I also have a Wisconsin master electrician's license, commercial inspector's license, and electrical contractor's license. And so I do both design of power and lighting as well as the physical installation of those things.
Okay, so you know lighting pretty much comprehensively.
Yeah, to the best of my ability. I've been doing engineering for 35 years.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. When did you become interested in the problem of light pollution and start advocating for dark sky preservation? Because that's a little different than just being a lighting engineer.
Sure. I think my first involvement with dark sky goes back to 1997, when I started specifying fixtures that were more dark sky friendly at that time. My initial thinking about the skies started when I was in Yellowstone National Park in college and saw a truly dark sky for the first time. Even though I grew up in a relatively small city in Iowa, it wasn't until I got to Yellowstone and spent a summer there and recognized the expansive universe. That's really what triggered my interest at first.
That's amazing that you can live in Iowa in a small town and still have never seen a true dark sky.
Yeah. It was striking.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. I grew up with it, so I'm always surprised that people have never seen it. I'm still surprised by that.
Yeah.
So you got interested in that, but then you really started working on it when you were a few years ago at our Dark Sky Park applications changed when the light pollution went up, and somewhere in there I started working with you. So where in there did you start connecting with what's going on here, and how did you get started in that here?
Yeah, I mean, I was the chapter president for what's now called Dark Sky International, the state chapter president many, many, many years ago, but wasn't really making any traction. And so when the Dark Sky Park proposal came up for Wildcat Mountain, Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and the Mississippi Valley Conservancy properties, I got involved in that. And then when the light pollution got so bad so quickly, you know, it went up 57% in 30 months. We were taking measurements. I honestly didn't believe those numbers were accurate. And then I started researching it further and found out they were entirely accurate, and now I know why. And that was when I really just went all in, right? And I'm passionate about sharing that knowledge with as many people as broadly as I can.
All right.
And Scott, can you tell us a little bit about what are some of the things that you believe are the hope for the future related to technology?
That's a wonderful question because the technology is changing very quickly. Fixtures that I'm currently installing in Lafarge, in Ontario, in Wilton, at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, for example, weren't even available to us until February of this year. So just, you know, three, 4 months ago, they weren't available to us. So we're actually installing some of those first fixtures in the U.S. So what's changing about that technology is manufacturers are building fixtures now with warmer and warmer LED color. So nothing to do with the amount of light, strictly the color of the light. And that has a big impact on the sky brightness that that fixture creates. So I'm putting up 1,800 Kelvin fixtures, right, which is a very warm color. And I would invite anybody who's listening to go out to the Kickapoo Valley Reserve at night or drive into Ontario and look at the fire station or the wastewater plant or the Baptist Church or the post office and see those fixtures. Wayne Haugrud in Lafarge has installed, I think, 21 of those fixtures now on the emergency services building in the Village Park, working with Organic Valley to start doing some of that. So there are plenty of opportunities to see those very warm fixtures, and that has a huge impact on sky brightness.
I think that people, and I certainly am not, or haven't been aware of all of the activism that is going on within our communities. And when you start listing what's going on in Ontario and Lafarge and at the Reserve, it's very impressive. That's just amazing. I think it might be helpful to our listeners if you would do a quick review of what Kelvin is. Even though over the course of most of our shows, we talk a little bit about it, there may be new listeners that are hearing us today that don't have a full appreciation or understanding of what Kelvin is.
Yeah, and it's a confusing thing, so I apologize in advance for anybody who I lose along the way, but we're all used to talking about light bulbs in terms of warm white or soft white or cool white or bright white. And those terms were intended to describe the color of the light we were going to get when we bought that bulb or got that fixture. Unfortunately, those terms are not defined by standards. And so if you want to talk accurately about the color of light, you have to talk about it in terms of Kelvin. And Kelvin is correlated, that's the units for correlated color temperature. That's the technical term. And it really has to do with related back to if you were to heat a metal, tungsten, to the same temperature at that degree Kelvin, that is the color of light that metal would emit when heated to that temperature. That's the origin of where that comes from, right? But you don't really need to remember that. All you need to remember is when you go into a store or you're online to buy a fixture, buy a light bulb, look for the K number. It's going to be four digits followed by the letter K, and that is the way you will know for certain what color of light you're going to get. And that's a critical thing for keeping skies dark.
The lower the number, the warmer the color.
Correct, and that's the other confusing part. It's like an inverse thing, right? Mm-hmm. So the warmer the color is, the lower the number, which seems it is totally counterintuitive. But just look for the lowest number you can find, and the range you're going to see now, 1,800 Kelvin is the lowest number you're going to see right now. That's newly available. You'll see numbers 5,000 K, 6,000 K. You do not want to use anything nearly that high outdoors. Indoors,
those are kind of glare bombs, aren't they?
Well, it's not. They do produce excess glare because of the color of the light. That's true. So the higher the number, the more blue there is in the spectrum. So all of these color temperatures are made up of a whole spectrum of colors, right? From ultraviolet all the way through infrared. That makes up the white spectrum for us, right? In between there's the white spectrum. The higher the Kelvin number, the more blue those lights contain. And there's times when you do want blue light. Indoors during the day, you want to mimic the sun. So you want a high Kelvin. At night, you want the opposite because you want to be as warm as possible, get the lowest possible number.
Yeah, one way maybe for people to remember is that blue light is daylight.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't think of that, I don't think. But blue light is daylight. And even though we think of the moon as being cool and and a blue moon and things like that. But at night, all the light we've ever had as humans have been warm at night, and blue is daylight.
So I want to just say one thing about that. So the moonlight itself is actually about 4,000 Kelvin,
mm-hmm.
but it's a minuscule amount of light. So mm-hmm. there's two things going on there, right? It's the temperature, but it's also the amount of light. So mm-hmm. all the artificial light we create at night, if we were to use a color temperature like 4,000 Kelvin, because of the scatter, right, and because of the impact that color has on circadian rhythms, because during the day it is that blue, and there's a lot of it, you know, millions times more than the moon, literally.
Mm-hmm.
So at night we want very, very little blue light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, if, on our last program, let me back up a bit. On our last program, we had a listener question about where to go to get light fixtures, you know, et cetera. And we, Susan and I, weren't quite sure as to where we could refer people. So the question is, where to go to find fixtures and lights?
It's a great question. So on our website, www.4darkskies.org, which is the Kickapoo Valley Dark Sky Initiative's website, I've created fixture lists on there. And those fixture lists have hyperlinks to manufacturers that make warmer fixtures. I've got a list for 1800 Kelvin, 1900 Kelvin. I've got a fixture list for 2200 Kelvin and one for 2700 Kelvin. And that's I'm constantly updating that list. And so products, like I mentioned, they keep coming out. I check every month to try and find out what's newly available. But I know that the trend is clearly towards warmer products. It's clearly going in that direction. And so I'm very confident that that list will just continue to grow. But that's a great place to go and then frequently check it. And if you wanted to send an email to info@4darkskies.org and request this, we could put you on a mailing list so that as we add new products to that list, we would notify you that they're available.
Yeah, so if you're doing home renovations or thinking of building an outbuilding mm-hmm. or you're a commercial builder, any number of people might want to get those updates of what they could use that's really state-of-the-art.
Right, and I'm adding lamps as well, so not just fixtures, but same is happening with bulbs. I mean, I can literally go to a big box store now and buy 3 or 4 bulbs that are less than 2,200 Kelvin, which wasn't true even 4 months ago, right? So.
Well, I'm going to be heading into La Crosse, and I'm going to be going to one of those big box stores, and I'm going to be buying a few of those light bulbs because I really need to change them out at my own home. True confessions, you know, folks. I have incandescent lights in my fixtures, and I think I need to change those out for maybe an 1800 Kelvin lights because my incandescent lights are really quite bright.
Yeah, and the incandescent would be right around 2700 Kelvin, and so it's two things. It's the color of the light, and then it's also how bright they are, how much light they put out. And to your point about turning lights off for the birds, the same for the fireflies, the sponsor of today's program, the fireflies, mm-hmm. that's really key, is to minimize the quantity of light. So the color is critical. Mm-hmm. And what I tell people is if you do nothing else except choose to buy a 2200 Kelvin rated light versus a 4000 Kelvin rated light, which is the most common one you're going to find is 4000 Kelvin. You walk into a store, 99% of what you're going to see is probably going to be 4000 Kelvin. But if you choose to buy 2200 Kelvin instead, that will automatically reduce the sky glow impact by 45%, doing nothing else. And if you were to choose a light that has no uplight, as opposed to one that has only 10% uplight, that'll reduce sky glow by 46%. And when you combine those things together, they're not additive, when you combine those two things together, the sky glow impact will be 67% less by doing those two things. And that has no impact on the amount of light in the ground. You have the same amount of light to see to walk around by and still have excellent quality of light. Right, that's just going down to 2200 Kelvin. If you go out to the reserve, go to the places I mentioned earlier, where we're installing even warmer lights, 1800 Kelvin, the impact is very dramatically better yet, just making that jump from 22 down to 18. But that's a product that's brand new. You aren't going to readily find it. If you go to our website, you'll see we have it listed there, have the manufacturer listed there and where to get it. But you really have to look for that right now. But they're all coming.
Does it help to ask when you go into one of the big box stores or hardware store that has a lighting section, does it help to say, I'm looking for this, would you bring it in?
It absolutely helps. And I've talked to many local vendors, right, because I like to buy my stuff locally as well. And it's, as of right now anyway, that I'm aware of. Of course, you know, products keep changing availability, stock keeps changing, but that would definitely help to ask local hardware stores, local vendors to bring that stuff in and have it on hand. That'd be great to do.
Mm-hmm.
The data you cited is absolutely startling, and it makes me wonder, though, about, you know, some of the other questions that people seem to have about the costs of these lights, the cost of the fixtures. What is your sense about, you know, the cost of replacing fixtures in a home right now?
I most of my work is commercial, I will tell you that. I'm not a residential contractor or engineer, right? Most of my work is commercial, and that's really where I focus my efforts because that's where the majority of the light is, street lighting and commercial lighting that's on all night. I want everybody who owns a home to put these on their house as well. So I will talk commercially, for example.
Okay.
So I to do some testing of security cameras, which I've done extensively in the last 3 months, I had to go out and purchase a glare bomb 5,000 Kelvin wall-mounted fixture. That fixture cost me $130 to buy. This is a commercial fixture. I bought the 1800K fixture, which has zero uplight, for $95. Both of them have 5-year warranties. They're both commercial fixtures, right? They're both excellent. But I actually paid less by far for the one that has zero uplight and is 1800K. So I think, commercially at least, there really is no cost difference, you know, to buying the right thing. It's the availability, and the availability continues to improve every month. They keep introducing new products. The same manufacturer that makes the products we're putting up right now has two other new products coming out within the next 6 months for other applications, but at the same very low color temperatures. And that process is continuing.
Would a residential fixture really be comprised of purchasing a fixture that has a cap on it that directs the light down?
Yes, that's the easiest way. As a residential, buy a fixture that's fully shielded, that has no uplight, and then put a warm lamp in it.
That seems simple enough. We have not yet addressed the listener's question. High-pressure sodium lights, what can you tell us about them?
They were used for 60 years, from the mid-60s until LEDs took over. They have very little sky glow impact when they're fully shielded because they don't have very much blue light at all. And that color, not the quality of light, but that color of light is what we're trying to emulate with these warm LEDs because it has such little sky glow and scatter. But LEDs are more efficient, but HPS had less sky glow impact.
Well, Scott, sad to say, but our conversation is coming to a close. Thank you for joining us today. This information was really interesting, and I'm sure that our listeners have learned a lot from hearing your discussion. We hope you'll come back again sometime soon.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you.
Yeah, there's so much more information that we'd like to ask. We have kind of a short program for it all. Looks like we're at the end of our program for July, so treat yourself this month by going out and viewing the summer night sky.
Also, remember to choose your outdoor lights carefully.
Dark skies are important to the health of people and all living beings. I'm Susan.
And I'm Carol. Thanks for joining us.
Remember, turn off your lights, go outside and look at the stars.